and welcome to the Triathlon Coach Podcast. My name's Simon Ward and I'm your host for this weekly show where my goal is to share practical, usable advice from the best athletes, coaches and experts from the world of triathlon so that you can get the most from your training time and maximise your enjoyment of the triathlon lifestyle. If you don't already know me, I'm the founder of thetriathloncoach.com and the SWAT Inner Circle, and I've been a triathlon coach for over 20 years, working with absolute beginners right up to Olympic athletes and coaching them to race at distances from sprint through to Ironman. Reviews and ratings are the currency of podcasts, so if you enjoy today's conversation, I'd really appreciate it if you could drop into iTunes, Podbean or Stitcher and leave a rating and a review. And while you're there, please subscribe to our weekly episodes so that they can be downloaded straight into your phone or your iPad or wherever you choose to listen to them. And finally, to say thank you, I have a free gift for you. I've put together 25 of my top tips amassed from 30 years of racing and training and coaching in the sport. All you have to do is email triathlonsuccess to beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she'll send it right out to you. Okay, now it's time to crack on with today's guest. Today, I'm starting a totally new branch of this podcast. It's going to be called Dr. Livingston, I presume, because my guest is Dr. Livingston, surprisingly. So, welcome to the show, Ian.
Thank you. Now, good to be here, I think.
Yeah, it's great. And I think this is going to be really popular. And at the end of the show, we're going to do it now, but I'll remind people at the end of the show, if they've got questions about health and how that can impact on their training and on their performance, then we'd like to hear from them. There's so many subjects that we've already outlined that we could talk about.
Yeah.
But if we get some questions specifically on those subjects, that will be useful.
That's absolutely fine. I look forward to seeing what this develops into. I perhaps should give a little introduction to my background.
Yeah, please do.
NHS general practitioner full-time for the last 25 years. Recently taken a career break just to try and get my own work-life balance back in perspective. Always enjoyed sport, cycling and golf in particular, keeping fit, keeping healthy, and married to a triathlete who enjoys sprints, half Ironmans, and the occasional Ironman.
And your wife is involved with cancer treatment, yeah?
End-of-life care in the broadest terms, whether that's from frailty of old age or from other long-term conditions, neurological conditions. Most of us die for other reasons without cancer. So she's a specialist consultant in end-of-life care.
Yeah. Great. Maybe we'll have her on the show. Hopefully. Most triathletes will be thinking that they're doing this so they can live a bit longer, But
a general practitioner with an interest in health, nutrition, sport, exercise, and the whole medicine, really.
What would be an interesting conversation at some point? We're about to embark on a huge trip from Austria to Italy through the Alps.
Yeah.
7 days of quite intense cycling and lots of climbing, changeable weather conditions. I mean, we've watched the Giro this week and some of the routes we planned are still covered in snow and have had terrible weather. But it would be interesting to talk about how one might manage one's health on a multi-day trip like that, because you're generally sort of going downhill, aren't you, in your physical status throughout that. And you see that in these grand tours that the riders are suffering with colds. And
it's fascinating. You know, on occasion, you can go cycling on a cycling trip with your friends in Mallorca. It feels like you're cycling stronger and harder every day, even though you're cycling further and faster and more than you normally do day after day. But on a challenge like the Giro or cycling with friends over the Dolomites, then how you maintain your performance throughout the week is important.
One of the big priorities for me as a coach, people who are regular listeners to this podcast will have heard me say many times that I feel like I'm more of a life coach now for triathletes than just a triathlon coach.
Yes.
And in trying to fulfill that promise of looking after people's lives to help them become better performers, health is a huge priority for me.
Yes.
It's my belief that if you don't have robust health and a robust immune system, that your training is never going to have the full effect it could if your body's constantly fighting other little things.
Correct. Lifestyle, what it means to be healthy, is so important to enable you to enjoy your sport and enable you to maximise your performance. And, and it's not just one component. It's not just the number of runs or number of miles you've done in the week or what you've done on your bike that week. You have to look at all the components together.
Mm. And what we often see, particularly when people are training for Ironman, is that they are adding more training in. We've got 168 hours in the week, and there's a lot of elements competing for that time.
Yes.
You know, the most obvious ones being work.
Yes.
Sleep is important, but often people compromise sleep to get more training
sleep
in.
Sleep is so important.
We've got nutrition. We've got travel. We've just got some headspace to allow ourselves to recover. And as we start fitting in more training, other things get pushed to the side. And often those are the things that we need to help us recover from the training.
And other stresses from family dynamics, from elderly relatives, from,
Brexit.
Absolutely.
We have to try and get that into every podcast. So immune system is one of the subjects that was top of my list of things to talk about, and it will be a good start. But you also wanted to chat about bone health, because they're actually linked quite heavily, aren't they?
Joint health, bone health, immune system. Yeah, I think that's plenty of material there. I'll try and keep it at an appropriate level. I'm very important to avoid as much medical jargon as I possibly can. I don't want to start blinding each other with science, but keep it chatting, keep it informed, absolutely.
Okay, so well, let's start off with immune system, and let's go on to basics just for human beings, because of course anybody that's listening to this starts off as a human being and becomes a triathlete afterwards. So a functioning immune system, what does that do for us?
Well, the body's ability to fight disease and to heal itself is still one of the great mysteries and marvels of nature. And the body's immune system is vast. It's complex. It's intricate. It's multi-layered. It's a network of cells and molecules and proteins. And it's continually protecting and healing our body.
I would guess that in your studies, your medical studies, you were exposed to lots of books that talked about the immune system, many of which would confound and confuse our listeners. But you did mention one to me in our prior chat, didn't you, that it's quite an interesting read.
Yes, absolutely. Well, in fact, when I was at medical school in the 1980s, a lot of the current knowledge of the immune system was unheard about. But the recent discoveries and the recent advances in technology summarized beautifully in a brilliant book, The Beautiful Cure, from the leading immunologist, professor of immunology in Manchester, Daniel Davies. It's a Times bestseller. It's the most accessible book on the immune system that I could possibly recommend for a layperson. And most of my material this morning will probably be found in that book somewhere. It's what I've enjoyed to read and used to research.
I'll make a note of that in the show notes, so anybody who's interested in digging deeper can go and get themselves a copy. So going a bit deeper then, the immune system.
The immune system, yes. Well, I mean, it is far more powerful than any medicine that's ever been invented. Plays a crucial role in our daily lives, and it does it all without us ever thinking about it. It's all done at a subconscious level or a reflex level. Lots of checks and balances. And it is important to have a healthy immune system to keep us healthy, what it means to be healthy.
Yeah.
I mean, if we cut ourselves or we've got a little bit of infection, we see a bit of redness, we see a bit of tenderness, maybe a little bit of inflammation. But beneath the skin, what's really going on are swarms of cells moving in to fight off the germs, repair the damage, and deal with the debris. And when you've been out training and you've got that muscle ache and you've damaged some muscles and it feels good, it's your immune system that's healing and repairing and tidying up and removing the debris.
When you're trying to recover, the best form of recovery to aid recovery is sleep. Mm. All right.
Yeah.
And it's like when adaptation takes place. So I think we all know that training just breaks us down.
Yeah.
Training itself doesn't make us any fitter. What makes us fitter is that combination of the training and the repair process.
The repair and
so
the healing.
You talked about when we've cut ourselves or if you break a bone, when the bone repairs itself, it's often quite a bit thicker and stronger than it was previously. Around the site of the repair.
And then it remodels, certainly,
Yeah.
It's the training breaks it down, but it's the healing and the repair that makes the muscle tissue stronger. And it's the immune system that monitors and supervises this and does it, and it's a miracle really how it gets it all perfectly right most of the time.
Now it's not, it's, I think as an athlete it's not really critical that you know in depth how an immune system works, just that you're aware of the fact that it is there and it plays an important part.
Yeah.
And what effect training yeah. has on your immune system over, not acutely, but chronically. I mean, there is an acute change to the immune system after you do hard sessions, but it's the chronic changes and issues that I guess are the things, the reasons why endurance athletes come unstuck.
Yes. So perhaps a simple view of the immune system is that it's programmed to fight bits that aren't us, bits of foreign material, bits of foreign germs. But really, you know, remember that our gut, the bacteria in our gut, our skin, our nose, back of our throat, we're covered in healthy, friendly bacteria that keep us well. And how does our immune system recognise the good guys from the bad guys? Got to decide which bacteria to leave alone, which are the friendly guys, and which are the dangerous bacteria that might make us sick, sometimes very sick, pneumonia, sepsis, etc.
Mm.
But it is constantly changing day to day, month to year, so over time. Our immune system, the part of our immune system waxes and wanes, affected by stress, affected by age, affected by nutrition, affected by our state of mind, which is an increasing area of research. Maybe reducing stress, maybe mindfulness has a beneficial effect on our immune system.
Mm. Does your immune system get weaker then? Or more sensitive as you get older?
And that can be beautifully demonstrated by the fact that 80 to 90% of people who die from the influenza virus are over 65 years old. You know, why is it that when we age, our defence against infection grows weaker? Yeah. Why do we heal less easily? And why do we succumb to some more autoimmune diseases, such as rheumatoid arthritis or psoriasis or, well, perhaps not psoriasis, for example, perhaps some thyroid diseases or endocrine diseases.
I did a podcast with another coach called Joe Friel a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about athletes being fast over 50 and some of the things that perhaps they needed to change in their approach to training and do a bit more of in order to protect their fitness that they've got and yes. make sure they don't decline. One of the things Joe talked about was that there's a lot of myths around aging
yes.
with regard to exercise, that we get weaker, that we get slower, that we put on weight. But often these are things that helped on their way by changes to lifestyle. Yes. So people think that they're going to get injured more, so they do less training to prevent that. They, because they're less active, they eat the same, but because they're less active, they're not using as many calories, so they yes. tend to put on weight. They don't recover as quickly, so they feel a bit less energetic, so they convince themselves that they should do less exercise rather than more. Are these health changes, susceptibility to those illnesses and diseases you mentioned, are they also partly to do with lifestyle choices as well? And you, it's not an inevitability if you actually do something about it?
Correct. It's not an inevitability if you absolutely do something about it. We can't change the aging process, the years go by, but by maintaining healthy nutrition, by maintaining healthy body weight, by doing the sort of training and resistance training to maintain muscle mass and look after our bones, is so important. Just giving up and avoiding things or not doing things smarter, more likely to have a less active, independent, healthy older age once we've turned 55, 60, 65 and beyond.
So if I'm understanding this then, that the immune system's constantly repelling germs, yep. you know, we're probably exposed to these illnesses and germs at every moment of the day,
yep.
particularly when we're, or if we're in an environment where we're meeting other people who've yep. also carrying those, yep. whether they know it or not. And 99% of the time, our immune system is strong enough to be able to fight off those illnesses.
Correct. And the opposite being true, if our immune system is suppressed through medications or illness, or, for example, HIV and AIDS suppresses the immune system, leaves us susceptible to all these common infections and respiratory infections, skin infections, infections in the brain, fungal infections. Our immune system is tidying these up all day, every day, without just thinking about it.
Why does it seem like we often get ill at certain times of the year? For instance, Christmas is a time when you often see a spike in illnesses, or we have these flu bugs, which we're often trying to, yes, you know, guard people against. But there seems to be times of the year when they're more prevalent and times when they're less prevalent.
Yeah. I mean, we've come to realise that our body's ability to fight disease is constantly changing day to day, season to season, year to year. The power of our immune system waxes and wanes, affected by stress, affected by time of the day, affected by our state of mind. It's in a state of constant flux. For example, the number of immune systems in our blood tends to peak in the evening and it's found to be the lowest in the morning. There are many changes that happen in our immune system at night as our body enters a different state of activity and energy use. Similarly, maybe in the northern hemisphere, in the north of England, as opposed to on the equator, different seasons, the days are shorter, the daylight is shorter, the energy levels dip, social gatherings come together, and our exposure to potential infections at a time when our immune system is a little bit suppressed and the weather isn't conducive to being outdoors and sunshine, it leaves us a little bit vulnerable to picking up these infections.
You mentioned earlier that mindset, your mental health has a large impact on your immune system. So if you're feeling a bit down, if you get seasonal affective disorder, you're feeling a bit depressed about the weather, the lack of sunlight, and then there's a time when there's some social gathering, so you're going out to meet your friends at the pub, you're shaking hands with people who perhaps aren't as diligent about their personal hygiene.
Right.
They're sneezing into their hands, they don't wash their hands, they've got those germs. Makes it worse if you're an athlete and you've been training and you're compromising your immune system through exercise as well, I guess.
Indeed. So yes, the bugs, the cold viruses, the flu viruses are more prevalent in the colder months. Our immune response is less sharp as perhaps we would like it to be. And we train differently in the winter months in the Yorkshire than we do in other corners of the world. And this leaves us a bit susceptible to it, and you have to be sensitive to it and not just dismiss it. Otherwise, you can make yourself more poorly.
Right, but getting ill is not an inevitability, is it? Just because we have a spike in colds in the winter doesn't mean we're automatically going to get ill. We can be more mindful and we can do things to guard against that. So just thinking out loud, I would think that if you didn't push your body to the limits when you were training,
correct,
if you give yourself a bit of space at the end of a training session, when we know that the immune system can be a little weaker, particularly after a hard session,
correct,
we don't go and mingle with people, we stay hydrated, so we keep the mucous membranes, you know, hydrated.
Yes, and the other thing about winter months and activity and stress, increasingly recognise the role of stress effect on our immune system. And although stress can inhibit our immune system, the contrary view that mindfulness may help a role in enhancing our physical resilience. Mindfulness about not being depressed about the past or anxious about the future, but a little bit about living in the moment and knowing what is important to us here and now, how our central nervous system, how our brain, how our mind connects with our body's immune system isn't fully understood, but a fascinating area of research.
I read an article recently based on a program that's been introduced in the United States, and some GPs over there are the physicians, as they call them, have been prescribing exercise out in the open, in the trees and the woods and the forests. It's not like the sort of exercise prescription out here where people get a ticket to go to the gym for 6 weeks and see a personal trainer. They've got these open spaces. I think it's called Park RX. But there's a fair bit of research into people's state of mind when they just connect with nature, when they walk through the woods and they listen to the wind in the trees rustling, they feel the sort of undergrowth under their feet, and they just spend time in nature. It's not like deliberately going out there and going, I will suck all this up and enjoy it. Just seems to happen when they spend time outside there. Do you think perhaps that, as you talk about there in the winter, we tend to spend more time indoors in an artificial environment
maybe we should be exposing ourselves to fresh air and nature.
Absolutely. I'm sure many of your listeners feel better for being in the garden, for gardening. Many of us feel better for being in the woods and the forests and the trees and the sunshine on our back. Things that aren't happening during the winter months. Still good to get outside with your dog and still good to exert yourself, but it's just different, isn't it, really? My personal well-being is so much better for eating my breakfast outdoors in the sunshine than dark days. And
yeah, absolutely. So you talked about a couple of things that can suppress the immune system.
Yeah. What have we got?
You talked about stress.
Yeah.
You talked about age. What other activities or things that we engage in would cause our immune system to be suppressed?
And lifestyle factors is the old favourites: smoking, alcohol, obesity. There are other factors such as medications that can compromise the immune system.
Like?
Oh, gosh. It's a long list and a little
bit. Well, what are some of the more obvious things?
Nothing that you buy over the counter, but certain types of... some steroids can suppress some elements of your immune system and should be always treated with great respect. A steroid injection into a joint is acting locally, but if you're ever on other systemic steroids or oral steroids, then it can suppress your immune system. Certain components of it.
And there'll be a certain number of people listening to this thinking, well, you know, that's almost like suggesting that people take drugs. But you could get steroids, for instance, for a skin condition. I've had eczema in the past that's been chronic, and they've given me some oral steroids to take and some steroid cream to try and suppress that and correct everything.
So eczema is an inflammatory condition, and the steroid is suppressing the inflammation. Inflammation is a response of your immune system. So there's an illustration of how steroids work on a local level. So steroid injections into an arthritic knee is one thing, but if for whatever reason you're on oral steroids, these interfere with your immune system, as well as the many benefits that come from steroids, of course. But lifestyle factors, weight, alcohol, nutrition, smoking are the important things.
Those, in fairness, probably wouldn't affect most of the people listening to this podcast, but in line with obesity, poor diet, too many inflammatory foods, too much processed food, too many refined sugars going in there.
I would agree entirely, and perhaps having too low a body mass index does not allow your immune system to function at its optimal level. Perhaps restricting certain elements of your diet is not beneficial. I enjoy my fruit and vegetables more than anything else. I eat precious little red meat. But some people will avoid butter, for example, because they consider it a bit fatty. But also things like dairy products, butter, have the trace elements, the selenium and the zinc, which is good for our body's health.
Just going off topic a bit, I do wonder that if back in the 60s the government had taken the course of action to see sugars as being the enemy rather than fats, that our nation, our Western world might be in a slightly different physical state now.
Fat got bad press. It's the sugars and the highly processed sugars and the fructoses that are causing far more problems than the fats. Everything in moderation, but avoiding over-processed food, excess sugar is so important for healthy mind, healthy body, and feel good.
Yeah, so eating more fats, being mindful. So it comes back to this mindfulness thing. It's not just putting food in your mouth because you think it's a fuel and you need to replace what you've burnt up, but being mindful about the food you put in. I mean, sometimes I think people get a bit too hung up on nutrition. They talk about macronutrients. We eat food, we eat meals that go on the table, but those meals should be made up of carbohydrates.
Correct.
Carbohydrates are not the enemy. You need them to function.
Sports nutrition is a fascinating subject, and the balance between, you know, energy that's taken into the body and through nutrition, and energy that's used by the body through exercise is so important. And correcting the imbalance, people get a bit obsessed by calories, but everything in moderation, a healthy body weight, will maximise your immune system, maximise your sporting performance.
You talked about reduction in body mass index there, and having too low a body mass index can compromise your immune system. Again, when athletes are coming towards competition, we know
that if you're lighter, you tend to be able to run faster.
Yes.
If you're lighter, you'll definitely ride uphill faster. So that's something that'll be on our minds in a few weeks. But equally, if you go too far, then that's going to compromise your health.
Yes.
And we can come on to the effect it has on bone health in a minute, because there's another aspect there. What is the balance there? I mean, are you able to provide any figures on what's an optimal body fat level that's healthy?
I would need to refer to more authoritative people than myself. But the one thing I'd just emphasise is that our body's immune system doesn't turn itself on and off week to week in a dramatic fashion. It waxes and wanes in over a longer period. And if you're tapering for a period of a specific challenge, you're not going to compromise your immune system in any way. You'll probably feel better for getting down to your race weight. But it's during the months of exercise and build-up that you need healthy lifestyle, healthy nutrition, avoiding things that suppress your immune system, and then encouraged to look at areas that will enhance your immune system.
Yeah,
good,
I think
good for mind and body.
I think that thing you talked about is having a race weight or a performance weight where you get down just for a few days. But often what you see is people trying to live at that type of low body fat all year is where it becomes unsustainable and perhaps a little bit less healthy.
Not just for your immune system, but also for your bones, for your endocrine system, for your hormones, ladies for their ovarian hormones, and your levels of fatigue and tiredness and performance.
So, well, we will come, when we talk about bone health, we can talk about relative energy deficiency syndrome as well, which is known as REDS, and of which there's an awful lot of conversation now. We talked about sleep. Sleep deprivation, prolonged or chronic over a series of weeks where you're not getting enough sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Can definitely have an impact on the immune system.
Definitely. What happens in our immune system when our at different levels of arousal, different levels of activity, different levels of energy use, our immune system is healing and repairing and removing debris.
In your opinion, you know, as a doctor, and I guess you've seen thousands of patients over the years, do you think that there's a general lack of sleep amongst the population? Do you think that in general most of us don't get enough?
Undoubtedly. I don't think our human bodies were designed for the 21st century lifestyle that we lead, on constant edge and technology and demands. And I guess, you know, we're never away from work. We've always got our phone in our pocket. There's always emails to be done. We have social media and distractions, and sleep is a very important, healthy, often underused resource that is good for mind, body, spirit, and training and exercise, etc.
Yeah. I mean, I know from personal experience, if I don't have enough sleep, I definitely feel a bit more irritable, a bit more grumpy, probably have a bit too much coffee.
Yeah.
I find myself making poor food choices. Yeah. So, you know, you go for those comfort foods that make you feel better, but it's only a short-term feeling better.
Our modern lifestyle dictates that we're up and active and work hard and play hard for 16 hours and rest and sleep for 8 hours in every 24 hours. But I'm not sure that's the way we were designed. These sleep studies show that when they're doing the astronaut training, people tend to sleep 4 hours and play and work 4 hours, sleep 4 hours, play and work 4 hours. But yeah, the modern world and electricity and everything else that goes on, it's overridden our natural biorhythms.
I seem to remember reading something about polyphasic sleep, where you sleep for 30 minutes every 4 hours. And somebody tried it, and he said he felt so good, but the rest of his life just fell apart.
Well, this is it.
Customers didn't want to do business with him because he was never there. He was working in the middle of the night. His wife left him because it was unsociable, and he was eating at weird hours, and he had no training partners because he wanted to train at 4 a.m. and they were all in bed then. So it might be the best way of looking after your body, but it doesn't necessarily, like you say, it doesn't necessarily fit in with modern society and norms.
Not in the north of England, but maybe in Spain. Maybe we have a Mediterranean diet and maybe we all have a siesta for a couple of hours in the afternoon. Maybe that's what we should be doing.
Well, it's funny, isn't it, that you know, whenever we go to Spain, coming from England where you can get, or if you're in America where you can get stuff 24/7, you go to Spain and you find the shops are shut.
Correct.
Between 1 and 2 or 2 and 3, and you're like, oh, these flipping Spanish, you know, why don't they work? Why don't they work the same hours? But like you say, maybe they actually have it right and we're the ones who've got it wrong. And there's that whole other area of discussion about the Mediterranean diet, and maybe it's the Mediterranean lifestyle and that sort of more relaxed approach to life in general that, that sort of leads to those pockets of sort of super long longevity that we see. So poor diet, smoking, we discount that for most triathletes. Alcohol. Now, I know that most triathletes don't drink a lot, but we do see things that crop up, you know. For instance, you might go to a race, you finished a race, you're super stoked about crossing the finish line of an event you've prepared for and dreamed about for ages. And then before you've really recovered, you go and have a couple of beers. Good thing or bad thing?
Well, a good thing in that beer is relaxing, beer is delicious, beer makes you feel good, beer is sociable. Bad thing in that really what your body wants is fluids and some healthy nutrition.
But not those fluids.
Correct. Alcohol-free fluids. Your liver has got enough going on without processing alcohol at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, if you've been doing an Ironman, your liver and your kidneys and all your other internal organs have been under a lot of stress all day. Adding more stress to it straight after you finish is
they're wanting to excrete all the debris that your immune system is bringing to them. So keep the alcohol down. Enjoy a beer, but in moderation. Low alcohol beer is fortunately more fashionable, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, well, when we work at the outlaw events, they're sponsored by Erdinger, so you get in there. They're even calling it rehydration now rather than alcohol-free beer. Seems to be working because I see a lot of people drinking it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Alcohol compromises your recovery. Certainly compromises your performance. We recognise that, so why should it not compromise your recovery from training and from an event? But equally, don't beat yourselves up, enjoy a drink, but in moderation and time and place.
My own personal experience is that it compromises my sleep as well.
For many other people, use it as a sedative. It helps you to get off, but no. It's a balance of the stimulant and the depressive effect. So if you find that alcohol compromises your sleep, or some people get a bit of nasal congestion with alcohol, best avoid it.
I've definitely seen some studies where you're right, alcohol helps you drop off to sleep, but it's an alcohol-induced sleep rather than a naturally induced sleep. And the time for the person to get into that deep, slow-wave sleep or that REM sleep is much longer.
Yeah.
It's not as restful, particularly if you've had a lot to drink.
Correct. And if you find that alcohol is compromising you doing the things that you enjoy the following morning because you've not slept well or because you've got a bit of a hangover, then you need to address your alcohol intake. But as I say, in moderation, enjoy a beer, enjoy a wine. Life's good.
I guess that if we want to protect our immune system, stay healthy for as long as possible, because as coaches, the number one thing we recommend for improved performance is consistency of training. And you are more consistent in your training when you're not injured.
Correct.
And you're not ill.
Correct.
So we talked about poor diet, smoking, alcohol, sleep deprivation, stress, medication. Aging, we can't really do anything about. If we pay more attention to those, so we don't drink as much, we do it in moderation, and maybe if we're going to have a drink, do it at the right time, straight after an event. We focus on our diet, we up our sleep. We're actually going to strengthen our immune system, or at least maintain its strength.
Absolutely. Healthy body weight, healthy nutrition, and avoiding the things that compromise this. You will enjoy your sport better, which is what it's all about at the end of the day.
What about the links between nutrition and injury? You know, you mentioned inflammation there, and that inflammation's good.
Yeah.
But if tendons become too inflamed, that's when they can get injured.
Yes.
Is there a contributory element there from nutrition, do you think, to that inflammation?
It's an interesting question. Nutrition is so important, and the vitamins and the minerals and the balance of all the goodness that are in our system. And it has been definitely proven in some of our malnourished elderly patients who are developing pressure sores or ulcers on the legs, then enhancing their nutrition, giving them the supplements, will help the healing process. Now, in well-nourished, Western, healthy athletes, it's unlikely that they're going to be deficient in these vitamins and minerals and goodness. If they eat a balanced, healthy diet with the fruit and vegetables in, some dairy products in, not too much of one thing, not excluding another thing at all costs. So a balanced diet is the only message that I would reinforce, really. Mm. But interesting that in the elderly, malnourishment, people who live just on toast and tea all day, their skin won't heal, and their other tissues, such as tendons and joints, will not heal the same.
Yeah, so definitely more fruit and veg. I think five a day is, for me, is a my recommendation as a starter target rather absolutely. Than your ultimate yeah, top line
absolutely.
Target.
Absolutely.
And I don't yeah. think there's any circumstances under which having more vegetables is going to be bad for you.
Correct. And the movement towards more meat-free eating, which one that I've enjoyed, it's got to be healthier. And I'm impressed with the younger generation who are taking this on board and
yeah.
Perhaps good for them, better for the environment, eating less red meat.
So with that's sort of like a plant-based type of, not entirely plant-based,
no.
but a plant-based yeah. nutrition and with the addition of some protein supplementary absolutely. Foods like fish and like white meat yeah. occasionally.
If, absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about bone health then yeah. and how that's linked to the immune system.
It's interesting just talking about vitamins, vitamin D, minerals, calcium and bone health. Our bones are so important, our chassis, our skeleton. Yeah, and it's something that's perhaps not talked about very often until something goes wrong. Yeah.
Mm. When you see at the top level, you definitely see athletes that have stress fractures
yeah.
or stress responses. So that's the yeah. the bit that comes before a stress fracture. And obviously in those guys, they've got access to top level physiotherapy yeah. And medical support and an ache that they might get around the shin or around the hip can be identified as a stress response and they can ease back on the training. Perhaps the rest of us don't have access to quite that level of support. But from what we said about focusing on our nutrition,
yes,
making sure that our weight doesn't stay too low for too long and that yes. we don't focus on keeping our body fat low because that's what looks good on the cover of Men's Health.
Yes.
Is going to help us avoid those things and of course, you know, excessive spikes in training.
Stress fractures are one element. So the super fit soldiers that can march for 20 miles with 30, 50 kilograms on their back and one of their little toe bones eventually goes, snap, a stress fracture. Osteoporosis, thinning of the bones, leaves us susceptible to fragility fractures. And a simple fracture of the wrist, a fracture of the hip, maybe a fracture of the vertebra, maybe a fractured bone with minimal trauma, a fall from just standing height, then your bones are not strong enough. You shouldn't be fracturing bones from a fall from standing height.
So osteoporosis is something we typically associate with older people, maybe older females.
There's an increased incidence in older females. Yeah.
Yeah. But that doesn't mean it's exclusively restricted to them,
no,
does
no.
it?
Men get osteoporosis. Certain medical conditions leave you susceptible to osteoporosis. What is osteoporosis? There's lots of medical diagnoses, but to think of it as thinning of the bones is appropriate. But we can't see or feel our bones getting thinner. There's a change in the density of the bone, but also there's a change in the structure of the bone. Normally there's lots of cross links and triangles which make it rigid and strong, and these tend to break down. But it's asymptomatic, we don't feel it. It remains undiagnosed until we have a fracture. And if you are getting a fracture in your vertebra, which can be acutely painful or go a little bit unnoticed because it's small, your bones aren't healthy. Spacemen spend a lot of time looking after their bones when in space. I don't know how does spacemen look after their bones?
Well, I mean, we know from the talk that I did on last week's or a couple of weeks ago with the cardiologist that the astronauts are rowing against a resistance for 2 hours a yeah. day in order to create some upper body and lower body resistance to then create a situation where the bones can uptake more calcium. So I guess they'll be their nutrition will be heavily monitored by NASA
yep.
and their exercise levels, and they'll be on it all the time.
The resistance training to maintain muscle mass, but also bones love weight-bearing exercise.
Mm.
They love calcium. Vitamin D helps the bones to helps the body to absorb the calcium, helps the bones to put the calcium down. But if you've got a fragility fracture, there is some imbalance between the normal turnover of your bones, the bones that's being laid down, the bone that's being reabsorbed. And it's serious. It's recognised that bone density is probably at its peak in our 20s and 30s, and then it starts tearing off for the rest of our
life. So when you stand on the scales, or you look in the mirror and you think, I'm looking lean, but my body weight's not going down. I know some people you can look at and you think, well, how are they so heavy? They don't look heavy. But that could be down to bone density.
Possibly. You know,
if they've had years of exercise where they're lifting weights, you know, I know that some of the Russian weightlifters with years of squatting have got some of the most dense bone around the hips and lower spine from all of that weight bearing down on the shoulders. Definitely a reason for introducing strength training into your regular program.
Definitely a reason. Look after your bones, they'll look after you.
Yeah, I've often thought that I have dense bones.
Well, interesting. We have to get you on the bone density machine to just to check that for sure.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Not easily available, though, are they, the DEXA scans?
No, but bone health, we want to avoid bone fractures. And if you neglect it, then catching up and rebuilding bone health can take a very long time and may need medication. Having a very restricted calcium intake in your diet is not healthy. I hate to keep banging the same drum, but smoking, alcohol, this is not good for your bone health. There's other chronic conditions. Some patients, some individuals, some athletes may have other long-term conditions like kidney issues or hormone imbalances. These can affect the bone health.
Yeah. Particularly with females, they have a condition known as the female athlete triad, where you've got low body fat,
yes,
which affects the menstrual cycle,
yep,
and that affects bone density.
Estrogen is so important for bone health, which is the problem in ladies after the menopause and the fall off in the estrogen. The menopause is a normal, natural, healthy thing that all ladies go through, but the fall off in the estrogen, the corresponding fall off in bone density. And so if it's a younger athlete whose ovarian function isn't perhaps as it should be, then it risks leading to some thinning of the bones.
Yeah, that's maybe a discussion that we can have at a later date in a bit more depth. But it seems to me, you mentioned there that your bone density is at its highest in your 20s and 30s. We talked earlier about when you're in your 20s and 30s, you can probably get away with sleeping a bit less and eating a bit more, less nutritious food, but still perform pretty well. Where this all seems to be going is that, in our discussion, is that as you get older, you need to just think a little bit more about taking care of yourself, about getting the basics right, about managing your, being more mindful. We'll go back to that mindfulness, thinking a little bit more about what training you're doing and what you're exposing your body to do on a regular basis. Thinking a little bit more about your sleep. Thinking a bit more about the food that you're taking, not just as a way of filling your stomach or refueling yourself after training, but making sure you're getting the right nutrients and minerals to protect your immune system, to contribute to effective repair, and to contribute to maintaining bone density in conjunction with appropriate training. So that appropriate training might be less cardiovascular and more gym-based work where you're lifting a resistance.
Absolutely. It's never one component. You can't describe a bike by just describing a handlebar or describing a wheel or a brake. You have to look at the whole, and your immune system and your bone health, your muscle health, our mental health. It's not one component. You have to look at the whole. And although it sounds like we keep repeating the same thing, healthy nutrition, healthy exercise, avoiding excessive alcohol, avoiding smoking, keeping a healthy body weight is so important for all these things. And we don't want to maximise our performance, keep avoiding injuries.
So if there was a message that we could give the listeners going from this, firstly, don't be depressed about this. Look, we know that age is inevitable, right? However, the alternative to ageing is death, so I'd much prefer to be ageing. Ageing's inevitable, but not some of the things that we think are associated with ageing. They're not inevitable, and we can do something to slow down their effect or at least halt them.
Yes.
But we have to be more mindful about exactly what we're doing. And what we're doing once we get past the age of 40 and 50 has to be different to what we do when we're in our 20s and 30s.
Absolutely. And the one other thing that I would add to that, apart from a healthy lifestyle that we've been repeatedly describing, is perhaps as we get past our 40s, having our blood pressure and our cholesterol levels monitored to maintain health for the next decades to come.
Blood sugar?
Yes and no.
Right.
This topic for another podcast.
Okay. Ultimately,
we go right back to the very start of this and my contention that I'm a life coach for triathletes rather than a triathlon coach. Ultimate performance, which we're all still seeking. We're training. We still want PBs. Perhaps they're not as easy to come by, or perhaps we need to adjust our goals as we get older. Maybe my particular goal is not to be that decrepit 75-year-old, but to be the 75-year-old enthusiastic with lots of energy. And that's my race every day. And if I can maintain my level of performance in the face of aging, that's as good as getting better.
Of course.
But you have to have the health first.
Yeah.
So please don't be getting too tied up in what's happening with your training. Think about your health. Think about your sleep. Think about your food intake. Think about what you're doing in your time when you're not training and managing your stress. But equally, having that social engagement with other people.
Absolutely. And back to the stresses, whether that's work or family dynamics or other distractions or our own self-esteem, self-confidence, anxieties, managing those helps you to enjoy your exercise. Your exercise helps you to manage those. It all overlaps. You can't take one component. I couldn't agree more. Healthy lifestyle, enjoying your sport, healthy lifestyle maximizes our potential for healthy, independent, active decades to come. I think subject for another podcast would be blood pressure, cholesterol, and cardiovascular disease. We can't do much about us being male, and we can't do as much about us getting older, but we can look at these things as well.
Yeah.
And reduce risks.
So ultimately, folks, if you can achieve balance in your life, and if you were listening to my podcast last week with Mike Ritchie, you'll have heard us talk about the fact that balance is impossible. If you think about standing on one leg, you could probably do it for 3 or 4 seconds, and then you're wobbling around and trying to regain your balance. But if, and life's a bit like that, you know, things get out of kilter, but if you can bring them back, there'll be priorities at certain times, not at others. Things are constantly changing, but if you keep an eye on your balance and try to keep a balanced approach to your training, to your lifestyle and to everything else, you'd be treading a pretty good path towards older age.
Combined with good sleep and healthy nutrition. Nice one.
Okay, so that's all for today, Ian.
Thank you.
We're going to ask the listeners next time we'll maybe have a main subject, and then if we've got any questions,
whatever you want,
we can answer those. So listeners,
I don't pretend to know all the answers, but maybe after nearly 30 years experience as a doctor, don't pretend to know all the answers. I certainly don't know all the answers, but I may know where to find them, and that's as important as knowing the answers.
Well, I won't drop the question on you like right in the middle of the thing. We'll have a bit of a lead time. So if listeners you want to email me a question about health issues relating to your triathlon performance or just to your life, we'll do our very best to answer those. And I'll obviously give Ian a bit of chance to do some research and come back with you with some options for you to try. So that's all for this week. Thanks for listening. From myself and Dr. Livingston, we'll be back soon. And next week, I'll be back with another fantastic guest. Enjoy the rest of your week.
Cheers now.
That's a wrap for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening to the conversation, and I hope you learned at least one thing. If this is the first time you've listened in, please go back and take a listen to some of our previous guests, and I can guarantee they will be just as good as the one you've just heard. If you've been a regular listener, then thank you for being a part of this journey with me so far. Finally, I'd like to take just a few seconds to tell you about my SWAT Inner Circle program. In the last few years, I spent an awful lot of time creating training programs and resources to help you train and race at whatever triathlon distance you choose, and for some of the events outside of triathlon like aquabike, duathlon and swim run events. As a SWAT member, you get access to all of these plans for 12 months of the year, and on top of that we provide guidance on strength and conditioning, nutrition, plus a whole host of other supportive activities which help you to train, recover and race better. We also have a really friendly Facebook community. It's an exclusive Facebook page for SWAT members only, and there are over 150 of them already. If you join, you'll be able to get access to that page, and you'll be able to ask for help, and our members are all too happy to provide guidance and advice based on their experiences. I'll also be there to help you find solutions to your training problems, and all you have to do is tag me in the Facebook page in one of your posts, or you can book a 15-minute phone call should you need one. If you'd like more information, or if you're ready to press the button and join the SWAT Inner Circle, just email beth@thetriathloncoach.com and she will send you all of the details. So that's all for this week.
Hopefully I'll see you again next week, same time, same place, with a different guest.